So today we're going to be talking about the clinical presentation of pneumocystis pneumonia in children. And the way we look at the clinical presentation is two ways. So the first thing we think about is a primary infection, which is the very first time that a patient, normally a child, gets infected by the pneumocystis jiroveshi fungus. So the primary infection is very, very common. And it is asymptomatic, especially in immunocompetent infants. Sometimes if you have any symptoms and they would be mild, self-limited upper respiratory tract symptoms of a cough or a running nose. Interestingly, lately there's been a report of pneumocystis pneumonia, a pneumocystis jiroveshi infection associated with sudden unexplained infant death syndrome, and we will talk about that in a bit. So they are very rare extrapulmonary manifestations, and those will usually involve the reticular endothelial system. They may involve the eyes or they may involve the ears. So let's look at this table that is drawn from a study that was done in Chile, looking at 128 infants who had sudden unexplained infant death. And what we find is that the overall presence of pneumocystis was 82%, meaning that in 105 infants, pneumocystis DNA was found at autopsy. Now, if we split the 128 infants into groups, then we can start with the 15, where a cause of death at autopsy was found. And in those, in only 66.7% of them was pneumocystis DNA found. If we look at the children where no cause of death was found at autopsy, that's 85 of them, then in 83.5% of them, pneumocystis DNA was found. And a higher percentage, 85.7% was found in 85.7% of infants, pneumocystis DNA was found in the group that had mild autopsy findings. So the take-home message from this slide is one, that pneumocystis infection is common in young infants. And two, if we compare the infants who had unexplained death, so that would be a post-mortem diagnosis of sudden unexplained infant death, then pneumocystis DNA was found at higher rates of 83.5% as compared to the infants who had explained death, which was 66.7%. So further studies are going on and further looking into SIDS etiology and continuously being carried out to further tease out the details of this. But from what we can see is that pneumocystis DNA is being found in higher proportions in groups of infants who have sudden unexplained infant death. Now, the clinical presentation of the pneumonia is usually a pneumonia in the context of immunosuppression. And when you talk about pneumonia, then we know the symptoms of pneumonia in infants. So they will have tachypnea, they will have dry cough, low-grade fever, and hypoxia that will usually present as progressive shortness of breath. And the hypoxia of pneumocystis pneumonia is more marked as compared to other etiologies, either viruses or bacteria. When we look at the younger children, then we have non-specific symptoms, as will happen to younger children with infections from whatever system. So they will have poor feeding, sometimes they have malaise, they might have progressive respiratory distress, and they could have cyanosis and apnea at the end. So really symptoms that look like any other infection in a young infant. Since then the presentation is of pneumonia, then it makes sense that pneumonia algorithms that have been used from all-cause pneumonia can be used to make a clinical diagnosis of pneumocystis. And so we will look at a couple of those. So the general World Health Organization recommendation is that when you have a child presenting to you, then you look for general danger signs, and if they have any of those, then you triage them as an emergency. If they do not, then you ask mom if their child has cough or difficulty in breathing. And if the answer is yes, then there's a list of things that you need to ask about. So one is, for how long have the symptoms of cough and difficulty in breathing been? You listen for stridor, you look for lower chest wall indrawing, then you count the respiratory rate for 1 full minute. And you go ahead to classify the cough and the difficulty in breathing using some charts. If we look at one example of the charts, this is one that's recommended by WHO and widely adapted, especially in East Africa. Then you look at this child who has cough and difficulty in breathing, and you want to check if they have cyanosis, or if you have a pulse oximetry, then if their oxygen saturations are less than 90, then you check if they are able to drink. Then you assess for the level of consciousness, whether it's reduced, and you check if they have grunting. And if the answer to any of these is yes, then that is classified as a very severe pneumonia. If they do not have any of the signs, the above four signs or symptoms, then you go to the next thing, which is, do they have lower chest wall indrawing? And that is called severe pneumonia. If they do not have lower chest wall indrawing and they have cough and difficulty in breathing, then you count their respiratory rate. And if they they are tachypneic for age, we have to remember that when we look at children and we count their respiratory rates, we have to go back and look at how old is this child, because the rates are different for different children. And if they do have tachypnea, then that child is said to have pneumonia. Lately, the severe pneumonia and the pneumonia is actually getting classified into one group. And the reason that is happening is because it has repercussions for what you do for management. So for the severe pneumonia and the pneumonia cases, then you can do outpatient care at home and probably give this child oral antibiotics. For the child who has very severe pneumonia, then you need to be admitting them, you need to be thinking about their nutrition, you need to be thinking about IV, intravenous antibiotics. Now, a child who is coughing or has difficulty in breathing and does not have tachypnea, then this algorithm tells us that this child does not have pneumonia and you need to be looking for other reasons or other explanations for their illness. We have to remember every time we look at the World Health Organization algorithms that the target is to be able to be very sensitive to pick as many children who will get life-saving antibiotics, especially in resources that are limited, so where we're not able to get a chest x-ray or where we're not able to get an expert to decide does this child need antibiotics or not. So the problem of a very of just looking at clinical signs and symptoms as a way of diagnosing pneumonia is that it's not one of them is sufficient to diagnose pneumonia definitely. So even if a combination of these features in a decision tree helps us to improve diagnostic performances, we still do need to add on something to these clinical features to be able to make a diagnosis of an x-ray. So not one symptom alone or even a combination of symptoms is very accurate in telling us who actually has pneumonia. So we need to add a little more. Now, if we were to look for symptoms that are specific for PCP, then Fati and his colleagues in South Africa were able to pull out these four symptoms as increasing your sensitivity of being able, both sensitivity and specificity of being able to pick children who actually have pneumocystis pneumonia. And these four clinical features are an age of less than 6 months, an oxygen saturation of less than 92% on room air, a respiratory rate of more than 60 per minute, obviously because they were talking about very young children who are less than 6 months, and if you did not have vomiting. So they tested these four symptoms in three categories of patient. So in a population where the pretest probability was 10%, then in a population where the pretest probability was about 49%, which is what has been found in some ICUs, ICU settings, and they took a midline pretest probability of about 20%. And what they found out was, if you had any of the three symptoms and you checked that in a population where the probability was 20%, then your likelihood of catching PCP, or your post-test probability of PCP in that population, was 36%. When you went to the four symptoms, any of the four symptoms, then that increased to 80% in a population where the pretest probability was 10%, and all the way to 97% in populations where your pretest probability was about 49%. So for younger children, so when you have a child who's coughing, difficulty in breathing in the context of immunosuppression, then you need to be looking for those four symptoms, and those are the children who are very, very likely to have pneumocystis pneumonia. When we compare the clinical presentation of pneumocystis pneumonia in the patients who have immunosuppression due to AIDS to the pneumocystis pneumonia in the non-AIDS population, then a couple of things come up, especially for the older children and for adults. At least this is validated in adults. And what we find is that in the AIDS patients, then the average duration of symptoms is weeks, so it's more like a subacute illness. While in the non-AIDS patients, pneumocystis pneumonia tends to be an acute illness. In the non-AIDS patient, they will also have a higher respiratory rate, so they will be more tachypneic with a higher degree of hypoxemia, and they have also been found to have higher mortality than the patients who have pneumocystis pneumonia in the context of AIDS immunosuppression. So if you were to summarize the clinical presentation of pneumocystis pneumonia, then what we have to remember is that it commonly presents as a hypoxic pneumonia that's indistinct from pneumonia due to other causes, but in the context of immunosuppression. That widely available pneumonia algorithms can be used to make a clinical diagnosis of PCP, and that in most cases, non-HIV pneumocystis pneumonia will present more acutely and with marked hypoxia as compared to HIV-related pneumocystis pneumonia.